This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
And we're coming to you live for the Build Four Tough Studio. Boomer Esiason, Greg Giannotti. It's Boomer and Geo on the Fan, simulcast across the country on CBS Sports Network and wherever you are in the free Odyssey app. Good Wednesday morning. Really disappointing loss last night for the Knicks. And I know that with these playoff series, it's up and down, it's peaks and valleys, but we were looking for a dominant performance. We have been looking for reasons to believe that the New York Knicks could move on from this first round and beat the Boston Celtics. A reason to believe if they ever face the Cleveland Cavaliers that they could beat that team. So we said it all yesterday. We'd like to see a rocking chair. We'd like to see another dominant performance by Karl-Anthony Towns, and you just didn't get that. It was sloppy. They played some good defense, but outside of that, it was the worst offensive game that they have played in this series. I don't know what in the hell Tom Thibodeau was thinking at the end of this game. He's got to get Josh Hart and Jalen Brunson back in the game. You cannot watch this game just slip through your fingers with those two guys sitting on the court. And now they got to go back to Detroit for a game six. And the way that they have played at the Garden in this series is alarming. So, yeah, I'm annoyed. I'm disappointed. And I did not come away with a reason to believe they could beat the Boston Celtics after last night. Good morning, Boomer. How are you?
Yeah, good morning, G. I'm disappointed as well. And I would just say that Josh Hart led all players with nine tackles last night. I mean, it was insane how many guys hit the ground last night. It was physical. It was intense. It was competitive. It was everything that we don't see in the regular season in the NBA unless the two teams don't really like each other. And this was a game in which Karl-Anthony Towns got in foul trouble. This was a game there which was mind-numbing to me. The last 5 minutes, there must have been 17 stoppages from timeouts to replays to injuries, you name it. There was no flow to this game at all. And if you were the Detroit Pistons, that's exactly what you want. And then you have your two clutch players standing on the sideline and not being able to get in the game when you need a timeout at the worst time, or you need a stoppage somehow, some way. And for some reason, the only time the Knicks couldn't get, or the only time the game did not stop, is when they couldn't get Brunson and Hart back in the game.
Yeah, I mean, Tom Thibodeau could have used the timeout, but he's saying, or he didn't really come out and say it, but the explanation would be, well, you need that timeout so you can inbound the ball in the front court late in the game. You don't want to be out of timeouts in that situation. Well, I'm sorry. That's not a good enough reason. Jalen Brunson and Josh Hart are this team. They're the DNA of this team. And Jalen Brunson was named the clutch player of the year for a reason. And to watch the series have to continue and the game slip away at home when you could finish them off with your heart and soul sitting there after coming out because of injury, ready to go back in and win the game, is inexcusable.
Well, you know what else that really bothered me about last night? And I know it was physical. I know it was defensive in nature, low scoring. Was the amount of open shots that the Pistons had under the basket.
Yeah.
I mean, there were so many dunks and layups, and there's obviously they have figured out a hole in the Knick defense. Because Auser Thompson, who is not a great shooter, he's the Mitchell Robinson of the Pistons when it comes to shooting and scoring, had 22 points last night, and almost every single one of them was right around the rim.
Yeah.
And, that tells me something. That was a big part of this game last night. Like I said, the Karl-Anthony Towns fouling, having five fouls and having to come out of the game was a big part of this game last night. And then, of course, you had three possessions where those two guys were on the sideline and they came away with no points. But it's not like, the guys that were shooting the ball didn't, they're going to shoot the ball anyway, even if they're on the court. Like Karl-Anthony Towns and Bridges, and they're going to shoot anyway.
Sure, but I mean,
Jalen
Brunson's also taken over these games late in games,
I know
too.
That, but this is also, there was a point in the game last night where I thought there was a lot of Jalen Brunson dribbling again. Now, there's a lot of that, and I know he wants to take over the game. Believe you me, we want him to take over the game. But, you know, when he's not on the basketball court, you know, the other guys have just got to pick it up. And Karl Anthony Towns did not have a great game. It wasn't anything like the two previous games. So if you want to look at last night, I would say when Karl Anthony Towns is at the top of his game, it's when the Knicks win. And that also goes along with Jalen Brunson. You know, yeah. And I got to tell you, Ananobi and Bridges hit unbelievable three-point shots to get this game close.
Yeah, they did, and then Towns had a big three-pointer as well. And at that point, I really thought that they were going to win the game when he made that shot. And Mitchell Robinson had his best game. I mean, there's some positives in there, but overall, it was slop. It was bad. It was almost as if they felt like we don't need to play our best game to finish them off. We're back home now. We're going to win this thing in five. And the Pistons were having none of it. I mean, I really don't like the fact that they have not been good at home in this series, too. Because if you're trying to come up with pros and cons as they move on, because this is not about beating the Pistons in the first round. It's being better than you were last year. It's about getting to a round further than you did last year, getting to the conference finals. And if you're building a pros and cons list, you would say, hey, they've been dominant at home, man. That's great. You know, it's going to be tough for the Celtics to go into the Garden. Well, I don't feel that way at all. I mean, they played a million times better in Detroit than they've played at home, and that's got to stop. That's insane. You should have crushed them last night. I mean, I did, in the beginning of the series, I did pick the Pistons in six, the Knicks in six. I can't be so surprised. But as I sat here, with the way they played in Detroit yesterday, I was expecting more of a feed-up, smack them around game than this crap we got yesterday.
The only feed up smack them around game is when the Cavaliers take on the Heat and such a big disparity between the two teams.
Or the Celtics take on the Magic.
Yeah, or like, you know, listen, you know who else moved on? Indiana moved on. And the end of that game was insane. I mean, how Milwaukee lost that game is just beyond reality.
Yeah, and we'll get to that with the Halliburton dad and everything. Just absolutely wild. What happened at the end of that. So yeah, I mean, I know it's, we go through this, went through this with the Rangers run last year. We go through this with the Mets and Yankees in the postseason. You lose a game, you feel terrible about your team. You win a game, you feel great about them. But I do think it's a little bit deeper than that with the Knicks because we've been looking since the beginning of the season for signs that this group could be extra special. And there was another opportunity for them last night to show us that, and they failed.
Yeah, well, you also had two guys get injured and not get back on the court.
But that's a problem. I mean, that's a coaching issue right there.
Well, I would also say it's just bad timing. I mean, it's just really bad timing.
He could have called a timeout and they would have been back in.
I know that, and you know why he saved his timeouts. I would always say
he was wrong about it, though.
I remember when Pete Carroll used to coach and used to say, there's no reason to hold on to your timeouts, guys. Especially at the end of the first half. Like, if you have the ball in offense, you should be using your timeouts, assuming that you are in scoring position or trying to get into scoring position. And or you could be using them on defense to try to get the ball back. And that's the thing that bugs me the most about in the NFL is that sometimes coaches don't know how to use their timeouts, when to use their timeouts, why you would use your timeouts. And last night was proof positive of you have to use the timeout. You can't let those guys sit over there for a minute and 30 seconds.
Yeah, and I know that they have a great relationship with Tibbs, both Hart and Brunson, but they had to be pissed about that. And Tibbs after the game is just not giving you an answer. He's not saying that was a mistake. He wasn't telling you why. He was like, well, you know, he just gave a bunch of BS in the post game about why he didn't use the timeout. So, yeah, I mean, it's just the game just started off. It had that feel of like, man, this is going to be a grind.
Oh,
tonight,
yes,
man.
I know. There was no walk-over
that first spot. Quarter was like, oh, man, these guys are not going to go away quietly.
And Cade Cunningham had his best game.
Yeah.
And I would also think that, you know, if you are, I'm sitting there watching it at home. So, you know, we get to see all the replays and everything else. I don't know how it was at the Garden. But, man, there were a ton of football players in there, and this thing turned into a football game.
Yeah.
I mean, this was about as physical a basketball game as I can remember.
Yeah, I mean, which is great. I mean, and Karl Anthony Towns, even though he didn't have a good game, he got into some foul trouble. You know, him and Jalen Duren were going at it, and Duren got the best of him a couple times. But I like to see him mixing it up like that, but obviously he was nowhere near where he needed to be like he was in games 3 and 4. I mean, he has got to be. We saw it. When he is great, the Knicks can look like a championship team. And when he's not, they look like they can get beat by anybody. And it just feels like in a season where they should have taken a massive step forward, that they're basically, if and when they get through this series, you're going to walk right into a propeller.
Yeah. I mean, and we were talking about this yesterday. You know, you got to give the Pistons a lot of credit by the way they're playing.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
If I sat here and I legitimately tried to watch this game unbiasedly,
you'd want to root for the Pistons.
I don't want to root for them. But I would.
So you said unbiasedly though.
But I would. No, what I'm saying is about the officiating.
Oh, okay.
I could sit here and argue if I were a Piston fan, but then again, I last night I felt like they let a lot of things go last night.
Well, they've been letting a lot of things go the entire series.
I mean, there were guys ripping the balls out of each other's hands and on the ground, and you know, feet moving all over the place. Another guy ripping the ball out of somebody else's hands,
Detroit more than it benefits the
Knicks.
That's
what I'm saying. Yes, 100%. So I think give Detroit a lot of credit for getting this to a game six and to play the game the way it's being played is what I'm saying.
Yes, right.
And how the officials are really, truly letting them play.
Yeah, which is great. And it's a totally different product than what we're used to in the regular season. That's why the NBA has a regular season problem. That's why they did this silly NBA Cup thing to get these guys to play in the regular season. But, you know, the good teams are still the good teams. And I don't think the Knicks can do to the Celtics what the Pistons are doing to the Knicks, which is out-physical them, frustrate them, and then get the series to a sixth game. It doesn't feel like the shoe is going to be on the other foot if the Knicks even get out of this series. I mean, let's get real.
If I asked you who had more three-point shots made last night,
yeah,
which team do you think had more three-point shots made?
I would say the Knicks did.
They did. Do you think there was a big disparity, or do you think it was relatively close?
I think that the Knicks did have a big disparity in it. I mean, because I don't remember the Pistons scoring a ton from three. It was like we were talking about. It was a lot of paint stuff. It was a lot of Cunningham driving to the basket. Am I right about that?
The Knicks had 9 made three-pointers.
Yeah.
The Pistons 8.
Okay, all right.
Neither one shot very good from three-point shot.
It was not pretty.
And that's the thing, like when Karl Anthony Towns is hitting his three-point shots, he only took 4 of those last night. He was 2 for 4.
Yeah, I mean, one was huge in the fourth quarter to tie the game.
Deuce didn't hit any.
He shouldn't have been on the floor at the crunch time either, man.
Yeah, but he's out there because they can't get Jalen Brunson on.
Well, they could. They chose not to.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really, it's not they couldn't do it.
I would think
Tibbs chose not to.
Like, if you are the coach and you know that this is the guy that you got to have on the court at all times, no excuses, and you can't call a timeout. I mean, or you're trying to save a timeout and he can't get onto the court for some reason because the game all of a sudden found flow. I think there's no question you have to call a timeout. Like, at that point, it's like, you know what they say in the military, it's broken arrow. At that point, it's broken arrow. You got to do something to get him on the court.
Sure. And I didn't see it, but I heard C-Mac talk about it, that our pal Wally Cash on the post game was talking about how he agreed with Tibbs saving the timeout, which is I don't know. I know he loves Tibbs. I know he loves the Knicks. I know that he is super positive, Wally, with the Knicks. But, I mean, I can't imagine that he really believes that. I'm sorry. How could you possibly believe that hanging on to that timeout in your back pocket so maybe you can inbound the ball in the front court in a key possession later in the game is more important than getting Jalen Brunson and Josh Hart back in the game after they felt good enough to play?
Right, and the other thing, too, is you got to take into account how much time is left in the game. And I understand that, you know, Tom Thibodeau basically said after the game, you know, it's time, score, possession, you know, that kind of stuff. And, you know, it's one of those things in this particular sport where people can argue back and forth. You know, I thought, you know, one of the really good things that the Pistons did last night, there was a moment where the Knicks needed a three and they foul Deuce and he misses the first of the two.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, it's the last one. It's right at the end of the game. And then they have to knock the ball back to the three-point line, you know, if you can.
That's right.
And they actually did it. But where is Jalen Brunson standing? He's standing next to the foul line. Like, as great a basketball player he is, there's got to be, like, an awareness. Like, Jim, we're going to knock it back to the three-point line.
Nobody's there.
Right, this is right at the end of the game. We're going to knock it back to the three-point line. You got to be standing there, so you can't be standing where you're standing, because even if you get the ball, it's not going to help.
Yeah, exactly, because you're down three at that point, unless you're thinking that you're going to get fouled on a two-point shot.
I mean, for that to happen and for something like that, that's like a one-in-a-million shot, that maybe they get the ball back to him and he can shoot it from where he was, but there's no reason for him to be standing on the foul line at that point.
Yeah, I mean,
he might have gotten the ball with a 0.1 or 0.2 seconds to go, and he would have had to heave up a prayer.
But you at least would have had an opportunity.
Yeah, but where he standing?
Yeah, I mean, that was, yes. You're right. I mean, it's just another sloppy thing at the end of the game. Frustrating. Hopefully they go back into Detroit and play as well as they did in games 3 and 4. But, I mean, this we needed something else last night to lift our spirits and believing that they could play well against Boston.
Did you see how many times guys were on the ground?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was like Evan Neal.
Rolling around.
I mean, it was unbelievable. Whether it be a Detroit Piston getting upended by Mitchell Robinson, who got upended.
Yeah.
It was like a cascading effect. And then, of course, the way that Josh Hart came down, how hard he came down.
Wrist, yeah.
He was lucky he didn't smash his head on the back of the on the court.
Well, Mitchell Robinson did hurt his head when he went down hard and he was grabbing his face. I mean, I thought that he, you know, how fragile he is.
Right.
I mean, and Brunson is just, he's got to get to an offseason and deal with these freaking ankles, man. I don't know if they're shooting them up or doing whatever the hell they're doing, but I mean, it's every freaking game. You're holding your breath thinking that he's cooked again.
Well, that's the injury he came back from. And now you know why they gave him so much time to come back.
That's right.
And it's still bothering him.
Well, we're bothered this morning as well. If you want to talk some Knicks, lines are open, 888-808-1019. We will get Jerry Recko's update coming up.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
All right, Boomer and Geo on the Fan and CBS Sports Network.
You know, I don't know if you guys saw this. Geo just showed me this in between the break here. So yesterday, you know, we were talking about Bill Belichick and Jordan Hudson and all the fiasco with CBS Sports and all that went on. And so he shows me a clip from TMZ.
Well, no, it's actually Inside Edition.
Oh, Inside Edition. Well, same thing, right? I mean, pretty similar.
Yeah.
All right, but it's Inside Edition where, you know, you're railing on that relationship and how he's being manipulated. And they go right from you to Sonny Hostin
on The View.
And she's kind of saying the same thing.
I mean, it really is unbelievable. Yeah, I'm talking about Jordan Hudson. They go cut right to Sonny Hostin on The View, which I never thought that me and her would be side by side agreeing on things on national TV.
Yes.
How about that? Two peas in a pod. Sonny Hostin and I.
I mean, it's hilarious. Like, you're sitting there and you are like totally serious as you would be about this situation, and you were giving your point of view, and they cut right from you right to her.
The media backlash has been overwhelming.
The media backlash.
Yeah.
You're part of the media backlash.
Apparently.
And by the way, we finally got confirmation as to what the rub is between, and I shouldn't probably say this, I'll let Jerry.
Yeah. We'll save that. It's a good tease here for 6:45.
Yes, a very good tease as to why Bill Belichick is so upset with Bob Kraft.
Yes, which is interesting.
Yes,
and I agree. And I did post that little clip up on Instagram on the Instagram story GOWFAN. If you want to see the Inside Edition, Boomer and Geo into The View, which you'll probably never see again. I don't think that combination is going to come to fruition a second time. All right, Jerry, what's going on, man?
We are brought to you by Serve Pro, cleanup, restoration, and construction. Visit servepro.com. What is going on is that your series with the Pistons continues.
We hit the two-minute mark.
Cunningham not looking to run shot clock.
Cunningham's floater is good.
I guess not, when you know you can make it.
And it's up to six. Brunson and Hart both going to the sideline. But the clock now under 2 minutes. Knicks down six.
Yeah, at that point, they were trailing 101-95. Wound up losing 106-103. Breen and Clyde on MSG as the Pistons have forced this thing back to Detroit for a game six. Cade Cunningham, the bucket there. He had 24 on the night with 8 rebounds and 8 assists. Now, you also heard Mike say there that Brunson and Hart going back to the scorer's table. That's because they both came out of the game a little banged up, nicked up, injured, whatever. So much going into trying to get them back into the game, yet they sat there as play went on. Here was Coach Thibodeau.
Time, score, penalty, timeouts, all of the above. what's happening in the game. You feel like the next possession, we'll put it away. There's a lot that goes into it.
But the clock didn't stop until they finally did call timeout with 27 seconds to go. In terms of this game, here's Hart, who says, we need to play 48 minutes and not just in spurts.
We go in the halftime with a lead, and then, we go into the fourth quarter down. So we got to figure that out. We got to come out of halftime more aggressive and punch first.
How many baskets did they have in the paint, did Detroit? That's the question.
Points in the paint?
Points in the paint. You could check that for me, or maybe, Al, you could check points in the paint.
I feel like both teams, though, really.
Yeah, but there's a hole in the Knicks defense. There's something going on where there's just too many easy baskets underneath the basket.
Seems fair. Now, this series has been the road team has played quite well. Here was J.B. Bickerstaff. Why has that been the case, specifically for your team?
Our guys, as crazy as it sounds, like, they feed off of it, right? Like, they feed off the energy of the opponent's crowd. They embrace the chaos, and they're comfortable there. And not everybody is that way.
Yeah, well, his team is. And so, now, that said, they lost their two games at home, so it's very... very possible that the Knicks will go wrap things up in Game 6, which will be tomorrow night in Detroit. In the loss, Jalen Brunson, 16 points on 4 of 16 shooting. Karl-Anthony Towns, 17 on 5 of 14 shooting. So you certainly would hope for better there.
So I got I asked Grok how many points the Detroit Pistons had in the paint last night. 48 points.
What did the Knicks have?
I got to go back to Grok.
Right, well, you're holding Grok, so.
Yeah, I will.
You're holding Grok.
Right in your hands.
How many points did the Knicks have in the paint last night versus the Detroit Pistons?
You often hold Grok in your hands.
I do.
It's going hard in the paint.
It's a big Grok.
I'm sure, yeah.
The Knicks had 44 points in the paint.
This game felt very even.
It felt like a tackle football game is what it felt like.
That's what the whole series. That's what the NBA playoffs has been. It's definitely been different.
I've watched some of these other games. They haven't been like this.
I don't know about it. I mean, some of them have been really physical.
I'm telling you, Josh Hart had 9 tackles last night.
Yeah, I get it. I get it. Well, Game 6 will be tomorrow night in Detroit. And remember, they have not won a home playoff game in 15 years. So they were jacked up for it and missed out on 2 opportunities. Now they get another one to try and send it back to the Garden for a Game 7. Then you had the Pacers. So the Knicks are still playing. The Pacers and Celtics are done. They close things out. Indiana had a tough time with Milwaukee last night, but ultimately got the biggest shot late.
Here comes Halliburton, hits the timeline with 7, outside the arc with 5, driving in the lane at the goal. He lays it in with 1 3/10 seconds to go. Milwaukee has no timeouts.
And did you see the Milwaukee possession right before this?
I did not.
And Milwaukee should have won this game. And they were bringing the ball up, and I was going back and forth, so I don't know who the hell was doing what, but they had the ball, and they were bringing it up into the front court, and one Milwaukee player threw it to another, and it went right through his legs out of bounds. And that's how Indiana got the ball back.
Yeah.
What happens? And Milwaukee had the lead.
Remember the play with the Knicks with the ball going through Bridges' hands and out of bounds? I mean, it happens. You know?
Yeah, but it was just such a, I don't know, just such a miscue on the part of Milwaukee. I mean, they had the game won.
And their series and season is now over. They lost 119-118. That was Halliburton with the go-ahead hoop, 26 on the night. The problem here is his dad. His dad then, moved to the court with a towel with his son's picture on it and taunted Giannis, and Giannis was not having it or was not happy about it.
I'm happy for him, and I'm happy for his son, and I'm happy that he's happy for his son. That's how you're supposed to feel. But coming to me and disrespecting me and... cursing at me, I think it's totally unacceptable. Totally unacceptable.
Understood. And here was Halliburton on the incident.
You know, as far as the incident between Giannis and my pops, I had no idea it happened until I got to the back and was showed the video. Me and my pops have talked about that, and I don't agree with, what transpired there from him.
Yeah, I would hope not. So,
yeah, I mean, it's just
for Tyrese for saying
it's
that.
It's insane. And good for Giannis handling himself in the way that he did, too. I mean, there was a longer clip that Jerry played a piece of it from, and he basically just, he couldn't have handled himself better. He could have laid
the clip's
into this
4
guy.
Minutes long.
Yeah, he could have laid into this guy. He could have knocked him out on the court if he wanted to.
Boo.
Antetokounmpo. There's so many guys in the league that wouldn't have been able to handle themselves that way, and Tyrese Halliburton's dad would have been just cold cocked.
Laid out.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, it takes a lot of professionalism for Giannis to handle it the way that he did. But what an a-hole. I mean, my God. You know, I mean,
it's
not like Giannis is some sort of jerk who is taunting everybody all the time, and he was, like, asking for this type of reaction. That guy's one of the classiest players in the league.
Yep.
I mean, what a joke.
Yeah, this was unnecessary for sure.
Yeah, there was a Gary Trent Jr. out of bounds turnover at 10.1 seconds to go with Milwaukee up 118-117. That's the play I was talking about.
Maybe about that?
Maybe Halliburton's dad should have yelled at that play.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Getting Gary Trent Jr.'s face.
Who knows?
Say you choked.
So the Pacers advanced, Celtics advanced as they kind of did what the Cavaliers did to the Heat the other day, 120-89, not quite as bad, but 120-89. So Boston wins it in four straight, and the Nuggets have taken a 3-2 series lead on the Clippers.
Rebound tipped out and grabbed by Christian Brown. 6 seconds left for Denver. Christian has it for three. Yeah! 16-point lead for Denver. 2 seconds left. Inbound Zubats, knocked out of bounds by CB. You rock him, you chock him, and then you steal from him.
Wow. See, this is what the Knicks needed to do last night.
Yeah, I agree.
You're right. You're
right. But that's a championship caliber group right there.
131-115, the final. That was Brown with the basket. But Jamal Murray hit 8 threes and scored 43 on the night. All right, let's get to the baseball. The Mets had one of those great innings defensively. You had a deflected ball off of a diving Vientos right into the hands of Lindor, who fires over to first for an out. And then right after that, the next batter.
0-1. Gurriel crushes the ball to left center field. Taylor over, racing to the gap, dives, and he makes the catch! Sliding onto the warning track. Oh, my goodness! What a last minute and a half for the New York Mets defensively.
Yeah, and then the inning would end with a great play by Lindor at shortstop, and then Alonso makes a great play in the fifth inning at first base. And in the middle of this, Juan Soto fell all over himself. But for the most part,
defense wins championships.
Defense can win championships. You're not kidding. But that was a hell of an inning defensively for this team. That's the play there on TV on CBS Sports Network. Yeah, it was pretty good. It really was. And then with the Mets up, so they're up 7-0. Like I said to Al, you can make the case the game's over, but because of what happened in Washington the other day, the game's not over. And so then Pete Alonso comes up in the bottom half of the inning.
3-2 pitch. This one is Pete's thing. Another rocket shot to left. Off the facing of the second deck. An absolute laser beam by Alonso. Solo home run to make it 8-0. His seventh of the year. Career home run, 233. He hit that one out of sight.
And so that was Keith Rad both times on Mets Odyssey Radio. 8-3 would be the final score as the Mets continue to win at home. First on the defense, this was Taylor on Mets Odyssey Radio afterwards talking about what a performance.
Yeah, that was awesome, you know. I think everybody was present. Everybody was on their toes that inning, and it was nice to give Petey a little break right there.
That's David Peterson he's talking about, who threw into the sixth inning for the win. In terms of their record, 21 wins now in the month of April with another game tonight. More importantly, how about 13-1 at Citi Field? This is Alonso.
We have a great environment here, like whether it's fan reception, like creature comforts of home, like in the clubhouse, and familiar faces like from staff and stuff like that. So this is it's a great environment to play. So I mean, it's been really, really special.
And they will play again tonight against the Diamondbacks. First pitch on 880 Mets Odyssey Radio at 7:10 p.m. As for the Yankees, so Trent Grisham leads off the game with a home run. Aaron Judge goes back-to-back in a belly-to-belly, and then comes up Ben Rice.
0-1. Gurriel crushes the ball to left center.
Gibson deals. Pitch swing on line drive right field. Laureano going back. He's looking up. That's good! Oh, baby! Ben Rice, line drive, home run, just above the scoreboard in right field. It's 3-0 Yankees.
Hey now.
Nice timing there, yeah. So back to back to back and a belly to belly to belly. And then you would get another home run from Rice in the second inning. Cody Bellinger, by the way, homered in the first inning. They hit four home runs, scored 5 runs in the first, and they just annihilated the Orioles 15-3. Here was Rice on So were you thinking long ball after Grisham and Judge?
Yeah, it might have crossed my mind. I'm not going to lie. But you can't go up there thinking like that. You just got to simplify everything. Just look to make some hard contact. And that was my approach.
By the way, Judge now he was 2-for-3 last night with the home run and 2 walks. He is now batting .412. You know, Alonzo's doing great at batting .363, I think it is. Well, pretty a little bit even better for Judge. They led 12-0 after the fifth inning in this game. And Carlos Rodon was perfect through 5, I believe it was. He wound up going 6 for the win. Were you thinking of that?
You know, I knew it was there. It's just, once again, you know, big lead, just try to attack the zone. So it's kind of in the back of your head, but you just keep going.
And he has pitched very well this season so far. Aside from a few bad pitches, he's been pretty good and pretty dominant last night. Carlos Carrasco, the start tonight on the Fan at 6:35. The Yankees are 18-12 and leading the AL East. The Red Sox did beat the Blue Jays 10-2, but we were talking about the Tyrone Taylor catch, and Al brought this one to my attention. This was, I believe, Boston was up 7-2 at this point, and Jaron Duran was up. And this is the catch made by Dalton Varsho in center.
Seems to normally have. Here's a drive to deep center. Varsho back. And did he catch that ball?
Yes.
He caught that ball.
I got to tell you, it's a better catch than I thought because, and you're not wrong the way he kind of got up and stuck his glove out, but he found the ball. That's amazing.
I kind of felt like he knew where the ball was the whole time. It's just that he tripped and, you know, and
yeah,
he fell. Hard.
Yeah, but when you lose sight of it like that, to find it so quickly, that's impressive. So they lost the game, but one hell of a catch in Toronto. And the fact that he falls down, too, and then rolls over, it's pretty good. Pretty good, pretty good. The Devils looked pretty good last night for a while.
54 shots on goal.
They led 3-0.
Yes.
The Hurricanes come back and tie 3-3. Then they take another lead, 4-3. Yep. And then Sebastian Aho tied it. And then after a scoreless third period and a scoreless overtime, their season ended in the second overtime.
A minute to go in the kill. Costa Spear out high, risks one cross ice. It comes near side. Jarvis plays it off the wall. Costa Spear for the one-timer. They score. Sebastian Aho with the overtime game winner.
Sad
so
game.
So see ya.
Yeah.
Overtime game winner.
That is very true. It is
I mean,
over.
Markstrom was right there to make the save, too.
Missed it.
But that's how you're missing the Hughes brothers, man. That's two big players that play such an important part of your team. I mean, it's just a matter of a war of attrition.
And they played better than 4-1.
Yeah, sure they did.
I think. But
the three-goal lead is the hardest lead in hockey to protect.
It is over.
It's all.
Yes. So the Devils have joined the Rangers and the Islanders on the outside looking in. Carolina advances.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
All right, so we talked a lot yesterday about the Bill Belichick, Jordan Hudson, CBS Sunday morning interview that went everywhere for the wrong reasons for Bill Belichick and Jordan Hudson. Ended up on Inside Edition, our conversation about it, followed by The View women talking about it as well on Inside Edition. But Jordan Hudson felt the heat, felt some of the criticism from the interview and what people were saying, and she shut down a question during the CBS Sunday morning interview about when they met, where they met, how they met, and then she put out yesterday on Instagram, well, here's how we met. You know, we told the story before, but I'm telling it again because of the backlash here. And then she also put out an email that Bill Belichick wrote to the PR people behind his book tour, that the gist of it is that I'm not doing this book tour for anything salacious. This is about my football life. They're going to write headlines. They're going to do this and that, but that's not what this is about. But you saw one line in that email that told you all you needed to know about why him and Robert Kraft no longer seem to be friendly.
That's right. And in that email, he writes, because he wrote it and Jordan posted it on her Instagram page, just to let everybody know what Bill wrote to the people that were promoting the book, including his longtime right-hand man, Burj Najarian. He was on that email as well. So in that email, he writes, look, you know, I didn't fight you really much. And I'm paraphrasing. I didn't fight you much on the title, all this other stuff. I really just want this to be about my professional career and the success that I had as head coach of the New England Patriots, taking a $500 million football team and growing it into an $8 billion organization, going to 10 Super Bowls, winning 6 of them over a 25-year career. That tells me that he didn't feel appreciated by Robert Kraft by the amount of money he was making, the respect that ultimately he was that was taken away from him the last couple of years after he got fired from the Patriots.
Yeah.
And I think then it goes on to I got to think that he believes that he was blackballed by Robert Kraft, especially when it came to the Atlanta Falcons.
As the leader of an organization that grew from a $500 million franchise to an $8 billion organization.
There you go. That's the line right there.
That's the leader.
All right, so now my question to you is, when does he go into the Patriot Hall of Fame? Does he go into the Patriot Hall of Fame? Are they able to bury the hatchet, as they say? Because in all of the acknowledgments, and I read through the acknowledgments yesterday, and I know Ben Valin, a writer up there for the Boston Globe, covered this. Robert Kraft's name is not in any of this, anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they eventually will get to it, but it's not like a player who had a falling out with an organization, and there's many years when a guy retires, maybe his mid-30s or early 40s. I mean, Bill Belichick is in his 70s now, so they're going to have to figure it out in at least sometime in the next 10, 15 years, whatever it may be. But I do think eventually, yes, because we've seen this happen a lot. I mean, whether it was, you know, Yogi Berra and George Steinbrenner or Brett Favre and the Packers or Terry Bradshaw and the Chuck Knoll and the Steelers.
Parcells and Kraft.
Parcells and Kraft. Yeah, I mean, right.
I'm just telling you, like, I think this one is this Bill is stubborn. Bill is really stubborn. And Bill had to get together as well. Parcells and Belichick had to get together. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, Parcells kept him initially from becoming the head coach of the Patriots and wanted compensation in order to let him leave to protect the Jets.
Yeah.
And Bill Belichick was not very happy about that. But, and I don't blame him for that one because, you know, he wanted the same thing that Parcells wanted, and Robert Kraft was going to afford him that freedom to make the picks and control the organization and build the organization the way that he wanted to. And he had to make a really, really tough decision, and that was to stick with Tom Brady over a very popular fan favorite, Drew Bledsoe.
Yeah, and there was also a very tough decision later on about moving on from Tom Brady and then him going down to Tampa and winning that Super Bowl, and obviously the Patriots have not been the same since. And we'll see with Mike Vrabel and this regime if they can get back there.
I mean, that's also a part of all this, too, now. So Mike Vrabel's the coach, and he was, you know, a guy that played for Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick identified him as a type of player that he would want, that he would be able to flourish because of the football intuition and smarts that Mike Vrabel had. I mean, he took him from the Pittsburgh Steelers, for God's sake. He should have been a Steeler his whole life.
Sure.
But, you know, they also moved on from Ty Law, Richard Seymour. I mean, a lot of guys that had success had gone through there. Danny Amendola, Wes Welker, you know, ultimately Rob Gronkowski had to leave. I mean, you know, they all had success together, but there had to be one ringleader and there had to be one decision maker, and he had to run the organization the way he saw fit, and that was Bill Belichick. You can't argue that.
Yeah, I mean, from the outside looking in, it seems so crazy that these guys are fighting for credit when all three of them deserve credit. Now, one's going to want more than the other, and Tom probably thinks that he's the guy because he went on to win a Super Bowl, and Belichick didn't, you know, after Tom left, and Kraft's going to think, well, I put everybody together here and from the top down, and Bill's like, well, hell, without me, you know, we're not drafting these guys, developing these guys. I mean, I'm the head coach. It's the most important thing in the NFL. You would think that they, with all the success they had, they'd just be like, hey, we're all a piece of this.
Yeah, but sometimes success breeds contempt.
Well, this time it certainly did.
And it did. Ultimately, it did. I mean, ultimately, they were going to have to separate just simply because they weren't going anywhere the last 3 years, and it did get stale, and things do happen, and it's like what happened to Mike Sullivan for the Penguins. If we talk about a coach who had a lot of success, was a 10-year coach for the Penguins, had three of the greatest players that the league has ever seen during their time, and, you know, all of a sudden it just gets to a point where it's just not working anymore. And that's kind of what happened up in New England, and I would think that when you read that email that Bill sent out on April 10th, about how he wants to promote this book and how he wants to talk about this book. That line, that $500 million football team to an $8 billion organization, tells you all you need to know. That's the hidden gem in the, I think, the overall lack or disrespect that Bill Belichick believes that Rob Kraft has shown him.